On the air at News Radio 1070 WKOK and online at WKOK.com. This is WKOK Sunrise.
And thank you so much for joining us on WKOK Sunrise. Rob Sander did all week what he does oh so exceedingly well, and this is his last stint this week at the console for us before he turns it over to Kevin Herr for On the Mark. But Mr. Rob Sander doing a great job all week and making sure that Spotify and Google Podcasts have these Sunrise podcasts all set to go. In the studio with us now, Movie Mike McGranahan is here, professional movie critic. I always call him a women in cinema advocate. He's an author and prolific tweeter. He's got his review of Turning Red. First of all, good morning, sir.
Good morning.
And Turning Red.
In Pixar's new movie, Turning Red, a 13-year-old girl spontaneously starts turning into a red panda whenever she becomes too emotional. That's right, after toys, fish, and cars, Pixar is tackling puberty. She learns how to keep the situation under control, but that becomes difficult when her mother tries to force her to take part in a ceremony designed to eliminate the problem on the exact same night as the big concert from the boy band she's obsessed with. Turning Red is Pixar's loosest, wackiest movie to date. Watching this poor girl turn into a panda at the worst possible times is hilarious, but also a metaphor for the bodily changes that humiliate us when we're teenagers. For all the crazy comedy, though, the story is actually a really insightful look at puberty. We all remember how intense our feelings were during those years, so there's a lot in the film to relate to. I'd even go so far as to say that this is an excellent spiritual sequel to Pixar's Inside Out. Appealing animation and good voice performances add to the fun. Turning Red is terrific entertainment for anyone who's ever endured those awkward adolescent times. On a scale of 1 to 4, I give it 3.5 growing pains.
I thought you might like it. It seemed to have a lot of depth, and all I saw was the trailer, but you could tell that they were really hinting at something noteworthy here.
Yeah, and it has a really offbeat, kooky sense of humor, which I like, and kids, younger kids who have not yet reached puberty will enjoy that. They'll enjoy watching the girl turn into this panda and some of the shenanigans that go on there. But anybody who's a teenager or older will get an extra layer of enjoyment of it because it really taps into that feeling that we all had as adolescents where there was something about our bodies we were uncomfortable with or the changes that were happening to us that we didn't understand or the emotions that were out of control. So they really have done a great job here in making a movie that's funny but also says something of substance.
And you say Pixar really works and works and works on a film in progress to make sure that it's ideal.
Yeah, I mean, they have a very extensive story development process where they go through a series of events and strategies to try to make sure their stories are just tight as can be before they actually move to the animation stage. I think that's why they have such a high level of quality and such a consistency.
What was the best Pixar ever?
For me, it's Inside Out. Inside Out, to me, is the top of the line for them, followed very closely by the Toy Stories.
And what was the worst? Pixar.
Cars 2.
Oh.
The only Pixar movie I didn't like was Cars 2.
Yeah, you were so unimpressed, I do recall that. Okay, and disappointed, too, I might add.
Yeah.
Okay, so that Turning Red, 3.5.
3.5 growing pains.
And you have to see that where?
Well, that's on Disney Plus today. This was made for theaters, but Disney decided that they were going to bypass theaters and ship it straight to Disney Plus, which is a shame because this movie would have made a fortune at the box office.
And why that decision? Because of the uncertainty, better to just decide to do Disney Plus and get a definitive decision?
You know, I think that they want to drive subscribers to Disney Plus. This is the third straight Pixar film in a row to bypass theaters, and Pixar movies are consistently extremely high performers at the box office. So it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. I wonder if there's some other motivation to play there. They say, well, the pandemic and the uncertainty of the box office, but we just had The Batman open to $124 million. Spider-Man No Way Home is one of the highest grossing films of all time during the pandemic. Disney's own Encanto did really well in a theatrical release. Sing 2 did over $100 million in theatrical release right now. So there's no reason not to release this in theaters.
Right, not much money lost, per se, if you say you're going to theaters and then you can't or something.
Right.
I mean, you don't get to do it, but that means you don't make money that you could. Well, and just from what I saw, again, what I saw from the trailer, the big screen would treat this wonderfully.
Yeah, it would have been great in a theater.
So, yeah, that would be fun. Okay, so that's Turning Red, 3.5 out of 4, and Disney Plus only. Mm-hmm. All right, let's see. You and I have been talking about our Oscar nomination, or the Oscar nominations for a while. We're up to Best Supporting Actress, Jessie Buckley in The Lost Daughter, Ariana DeBose in West Side Story, Judy Dench in Belfast, Kirsten Dunst in Power the Dog, and Anjanou. Oh, that's right. Yeah, you told me that before. Okay.
King Richard.
Your view on this particular category? Any big omissions there? Any bonus on the list that doesn't really belong?
Nope. Five solid choices, and I really don't know who's going to win. This is a tight race. I'm really excited that they nominated Jessie Buckley. This is an actress who hasn't quite broken through yet in terms of mainstream awareness, but you can go on IMDb and you can pick any movie she's in at random, and it's going to be fantastic. She is really a bright up-and-coming actress. I'm not sure she's going to win for this role, though she would certainly deserve to if she does, but this is going to help get her name out there a little more and more people will know who she is. But, you know, a fantastic category and really hard to pick just one of those five outstanding performances.
And in The Lost Daughter, not a film that I recall much talk about. Maybe I missed some of that.
It's a Netflix film and it's very good. And she plays Olivia Colman's character in flashback scenes. So the two of them are playing the same character. Olivia Colman nominated for Best Actress. But that is a film on Netflix I would definitely recommend. And it marks the directorial debut of actress Maggie Gyllenhaal, who I think has a very bright future behind the camera, as well as the success she's had in front of it.
All right. To be continued. Next week, we'll hit the Best Director category, and we'll wrap up the Oscars. We'll be finally done by the time it is time for the Oscars, but that's all right. Speaking of time for Critics' Choice Awards this Sunday.
Yes, Critics' Choice Awards will air this Sunday night at 7 p.m. on the CW and TBS. So I hope everyone will tune in. I guarantee you we're going to celebrate the best films, television shows, and performances of 2021.
We being one of the Critics' Choice voters. Did you know in advance who wins?
Nope. I cast my ballot last night, but I will find out who wins when the awards are announced
time
live
as everybody
Sunday
else.
Night.
So this is going to be fun TV. This will be fun to watch this Sunday?
Absolutely. We put on a very fun show. Lots of celebrities in attendance. Lots of celebrity presenters. And again, you know, we're the people who see everything. So we're picking the best of the best. And if you haven't seen some of these films or performances, you're going to get some great recommendations.
All right. No politics, no buy-ins, no big ads in the Hollywood magazines impact you. These are pretty objective viewpoints.
I vote on what I'm passionate about. Yep.
All right. Super. Well, thank you. Okay. Critics' Choice Awards Sunday night.
Sunday night on TBS and the CW.
Oh, TBS. So not everybody has TBS, so they'll have to get that. All right. Black Panther. Panther director mistaken for a bank robber. I kind of heard a few sentences about this.
Yeah, this was shocking. It happened on January 7th, but the video just came out. Ryan Coogler, the director of Creed and Black Panther, and two other people pulled up to a Bank of America branch. Ryan got out, went into the bank. He handed the teller a withdrawal slip with a message written on it that said, "I would like to withdraw $12,000 cash from my checking account. Please do the money count somewhere else. I'd like to be discreet." And the teller thought that she was being robbed, so she tripped an alarm. Police showed up and briefly detained and handcuffed Coogler until they realized that the men had done nothing wrong. So just a really shocking story here about a very well-known and successful director who kind of ended up being, and he is African-American, ended up being wrongly suspected of being a bank robber simply because he wanted to withdraw a large amount of money from his own account.
Okay. I'm not sure what to make out of that. Maybe a sign of the times or not, I guess is the sort of the logical question to stem from that. Okay, so all's well that ends well. Apologies across the board. So much for no one knowing that he's walking around with 12 grand. That didn't work out as well.
That got out.
Okay. All right. Dune 2. Oh, thank heaven we're going to have a Dune 2 because Dune 1 was so exciting. So, but anyway.
Yeah, Dune 2, of course, the movie is only half the book and it ends, you know, with Dune Part 2 coming. But the interesting thing is that they are in early talks with Oscar nominee Florence Pugh to have a pretty sizable role in Dune 2. And here again, she's one of the best young actresses we have. You've seen her in Fighting With My Family, Midsommar, Oscar nominee for Little Women, of course, a scene-stealing role in Black Widow. So she's an actress whose career is just skyrocketing, and now she may sign one for Dune 2, which automatically increases my interest in it. And as you may recall, I was bored to tears by Dune Part 1, so maybe I'll be able to stay awake in the second one knowing that there's going to be a performer I really like in it.
Yeah, I didn't think think much of it either, but I don't like that kind of sort of global spacey. You can almost do anything on the screen with this sci-fi you want to because you just say, okay, well, now it's possible. You know, people appearing and disappearing and all that kind of stuff. So, okay, so super. We're going to have more spice in our future. All right, so what's the latest on Aquaman 2? The Flash and Shazam 2.
Yeah, Warner Brothers announced that they're shaking up their DC schedule. Aquaman 2 and The Flash, which were supposed to debut this year, are being bumped to next year. And meanwhile, Shazam 2, which was supposed to be next year, is being bumped up to this Christmas. So if you're a fan of DC movies, you're going to have to be aware that the release schedule is all jumbled up now.
Okay, so we'll have to follow that. And we can follow you on Twitter to find out these, monitor these kind of things.
Yep, at Aisle Seat.
Well, thank you so much, Movie Mike McGranahan. Much appreciated. Will we see you Sunday on camera at any point?
No, I'm not attending in person, so okay. I'll be on my couch.
All right, fabulous. All right, like the rest of us enjoying the show. Who's the host? Did you tell me?
Tate Diggs and comedian Nicole Byer are our hosts.
Okay, I'm sure they're famous. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Movie Mike McGranahan, professional movie critic. His appearance on Friday morning, sponsored by the Campus Theater, campustheater.org.